Welcome back here to 560 WQAM. Greg Likens in for Mark Hochman alongside Channing Crowder as we continue on here. Plenty going on with the Miami Dolphins. A big scrimmage tomorrow. Been plenty of news emanating from the team this week. And for more on that, we go out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline where you can shop over 1,500 Toyotas indoors in one of America's largest showrooms at Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. That's where we welcome in Cameron Wolf. Does an excellent job covering the Dolphins for ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at Cameron Wolf. Cam may be tired of talking to me because between today, earlier this week, last week, he's been on with me, but always enjoy his insight. Cam, thanks for joining us today. How's everything going on this Friday?
Going great. How are you?
Doing well, Cam. And we got a lot to get into. Certainly, we've got this scrimmage tomorrow. Let's start with that. I know Brian Flores spoke to the media today before a little bit of a walkthrough, but what did he say to expect from his first scrimmage as the Dolphins head coach?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was that he said it should be a game-like atmosphere. You know, you never know with these scrimmages whether they're going to do some sort of 7-on-7 type drill or if they're going to have really the ones going against the ones. But he said it's going to be, you know, full force, as much of a game as you can have in these type of scrimmages. So they'll have situational drills and whatnot, but we can tell that they're going to be hidden. And that's something I definitely want to see. I want to see who's the physical guys, who's the guys who are shying away from contact, and ultimately how the formations and all the different, you know, chess pieces they have fit together on the field.
And Cameron, with being around Flores a little bit, being around him, you know, seeing how he's speaking about the scrimmage, I haven't heard that, you know, game atmosphere stuff with a lot of coaches I played for and after I have retired. But are you starting to see any clarity of what the Patriot way is by being around Brian Flores for these last couple weeks?
Yeah. We've heard it. Almost every single presser has been the cliche that you almost roll your eyes at. But I can hear Belichick saying them too. The discipline, the not beating yourself, focus, mental elements, the small things, all those elements are sort of Patriot traits that I think they're going to make a priority here. I think the biggest thing we always think of from the Patriot system is them maximizing players who aren't necessarily the stars and making them into who they are with the Patriots. So I think that's what Flores is going to have to try to do with this team. It's a lot bigger of assignment with the talent he has on this roster compared to what they have on the Patriots. But I think that's where you're going to see the most Patriot way of Brian Flores, is that he might make some guys that you might have otherwise said, become players this year. And I think that's, that's his intention.
And is that kind of along that same approach? I've heard, I think Omar Kelly, he tweeted about how they're not putting guys in positions. They're seeing what they do well. You heard Rashad Jones playing a linebacker early in camp. They have McCain at safety. Right. They have Minka at other positions. Is that what you're speaking of, where he's just going to find what these guys' tricks, what these guys' strengths are, and use them?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I was trying to figure out a depth chart to put together for ESPN.com, and it's hard for me to figure out who is what position because, like you said, they fit roles so much that it's hard to pigeonhole them. You know, like Bobby McCain's been playing a lot of free safety, but what does that mean for Minka Fitzpatrick? Is he a cornerback now? Should he be listed as a cornerback? Or is he still going to play some safety? Like, all of these things are sort of in flux more than they normally would be. Nothing is what it will seem. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. That's what I mean by, you know, I think you're going to have see players who, you know, have specific packages. They might have 10 or 15 plays they play, and they only play in certain situations. So rather than a position, they're a package player. So I think that's something that'll be unique. Like you mentioned, Rashad and TJ, they're going to play a lot more linebacker than they played in their careers. And they're saying all the right things about it right now. But, you know, they're still listed as safeties, but I would say that a fair share of their snaps are going to be playing some sort of linebacker and sub packages. So, yeah, a lot of these guys are going to be multi-position players, as they start in this defense.
Cameron Wolf covers the Dolphins for ESPN, joining us here on 560 WQAM. And along those lines, Cameron, are you viewing this as the overall philosophy that we're going to see from this regime in general, or is part of this because they're trying to compensate for their lack of established pass rushers who can get after the quarterback?
Well, I mean, if you look at the Patriots, they've never really been, and I guess this is what we're basing it off of because that's where Flo comes from, but they've never really had that elite pass rusher either. I don't think any of the Belichick disciples have really valued elite edge rushers like the rest of the NFL does. So, you know, we'll see if it works for the Dolphins. I'm not optimistic that it's going to help them this year because there's nobody that you could be scared of. But I think the scheme thing is here to stay. I think they'll always have these multi-position guys in specific roles. Like even when we look at the Patriots, like Kyle Van Noy, the linebacker, but you think of him differently than you might think of a traditional linebacker because of the role they ask him to do. I think you're going to have those type players. Like I think Jerome Baker is going to have a specific role than the other linebackers have. So he's going to have, you know, a different assignment, a different package. So I think that's less about talent and more about what they're trying to do. But talent helps that a lot, and that's something that, you know, they're going to have to find that, you know, in the next couple of years because they are missing some this year.
Cameron, I'm going to wait for the quarterback talk till the end because I know you talk about it every damn day of your life. We do too.
Yeah.
But one thing that people don't talk about, man, is the receivers. You've been out there. They've practiced right. A number of times. They got their first scrimmage coming up tomorrow. If you have to say who's the number one receiver on the team, who is in the middle of plays, if they have a third and seven, fourth quarter, third and seven, who are they throwing the ball to?
Kenny Stills. Kenny Stills is their number one receiver. He was sort of de facto number one this year, but I think he's actually set up to have a pretty good year this year. I think, you know, with the quarterback, whether it's Ryan Fitzpatrick or Josh Rosen, I think they're going to go vertical a lot more than they did with Ryan Tannehill. And I think that's going to be set up for him to really succeed, whether on the outside or in the slot. So I think he's your number one receiver, your best chance to, you know, get an 800 or 1,000-yard receiver. Your go-to on third downs will probably be him. You know, Devontae Parker, you're always hoping to get something out of him. But I think if he's your second or third receiver, you're happy with that. The biggest thing for him is just to stay healthy. And, you know, Albert Wilson for a while looked like he could really be that number one and with his yak ability. But I think for him this year, he's going to have to get healthy and kind of get back into the player he was last year. You know, the hip injury really took a while for him to come back at. And I don't even know if it's a guarantee that he'll be 100% from week one. So I think Kenny Stills is the guy that, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick and Josh Rosen are going to be looking at as their go-to receiver.
And you talked about Devontae Parker and staying healthy. That's everybody's criticism of him, just him being a frail guy, just getting injury after injury. Have you lost hope in him? Because a lot of the fan base has.
I'll say this. I was shocked that he came back because I thought the Dolphins lost hope in him. But clearly, Chris Greer, you know, he wants to give it one more chance. You know, you can't predict health. So if he's healthy, then, you know, maybe he becomes, you know, a number two, number three receiver. I've lost hope for him being a number one receiver, and I think that's what they drafted him to be. I don't think that he'll ever be that. But I do think that he can still be a guy who can help you. And, you know, maybe you'll get one or two of those Houston games that he had last year where you're like, oh, wow, this is where we keep this guy. So, you know, I think you just got to lower your expectations. He's no longer a number one, you know, talent receiver. I think he's a number two or number three. And if he stays healthy, and that's the big if, that's what you hope from him.
Definitely the big if there with Devontae Parker. Cameron Wolf joining us here, covers the Dolphins for ESPN. Cameron, I enjoyed your article about the running back situation, and I think a lot of people have perked up when they hear Kalen Ballage getting first-team reps. With that being said, Kenyon Drake, undeniable talent there. There's a reason he led the team in touchdowns last season, even though he wasn't getting a whole lot of touches. How do you envision this Dolphins coaching staff, you know, maybe if we're hearkening back to the Patriots as well, they used a lot of running backs there. How do you envision them splitting the reps between those two players?
I think it's going to be a headache for fantasy football owners every week. I was talking to Matthew Berry on our team earlier today, and I'm just like, man, fantasy football owners are going to be crazy because I think on any given week it might be Kalen, it might be Kenyon, it could be Mark Walton if somebody, you know, if something happens in the game plan. So I think that it'll be hot hand, and I talked to Eric Studisville about that this week, and he said, man, I don't really care who the guy is. I don't really care who, you know, is our number one running back. I don't come into a game with a number of carries or a number of touches I got to get each back. I think he'll look at it as, you know, Kenyon Drake and Kalen Blige are his 1A, 1B, however you want to put it. And whoever is the guy on that day that's performing well is going to get the most touches. So, you know, Kenyon's the more proven guy. So I expect him to be the leader in touches in the backfield. But I think Kalen has an ability, especially with his size, and if he gets better at breaking tackles, that he can, you know, be a little bit more of that inside carrier than Kenyon has been over his career. So the big thing about Kenyon, and everybody always gets frustrated, like, why can't he be the guy? Why can't this be his breakout year? He hasn't had more than 133 carries since high school. He hasn't proven that he can carry that workload. I just think that his role is to be, you know, as part of a committee, and that's not necessarily a negative. He can excel in that role, but that might be his role.
Cameron, I'm going to approach this quarterback thing differently. Hopefully you hadn't been asked this question. What are Josh Rosen's strengths? All we do is hear about his weaknesses, how he's getting outplayed, how he's getting everything by Fitzpatrick. What are Josh Rosen's strengths? What's something you saw him do that you said, damn, that's impressive?
He has the best arm of all the quarterbacks there. I think I've seen some passes that he's thrown, and you could, like, hear the wind blowing if you're close enough, because of how much velocity he puts on him, how much mustard, how quickly he gets it out. And I think when he's on, and this is really when he's on, he is the best pure passer by far on this roster. And I think that's what sets him apart. That's what makes him tantalizing, is because when you see those doses, you're like, oh, man, this guy could be, you know, why the Cardinals picked him 10th overall. The issue, obviously, has been the consistency, but I think the potential – we've seen it in the arm. And I think that his, you know, the mental element of him thinking in the game, when he runs the two-man offense, the no-huddle offense, is where I've really seen him shine. When he doesn't have to think as much, when he's just flowing, I see him going to his reads quickly. I see him hitting his receivers in stride. I saw him place balls exactly where the receiver needs to get it. Those are elements that come in specific situations. So I'd say that arm talent and then how he works in those two-minute no-huddle situations are probably the biggest positives I see out of Josh Rosen.
Well, as a follow-up to that, how much ground do you think Rosen can possibly make up, say, in the scrimmage tomorrow? Is the scrimmage going to be significant for him, or are you waiting to see him in a preseason game to see if he can actually be in the mix here without Ryan Fitzpatrick being said publicly by Brian Flores that he's the guy right now?
No, I think this has actually been a really solid week for Josh Rosen on the practice field. Really after Brian Flores said that Fitz is, you know, the early leader. So I'd love to see him come out and put an exclamation point on his week with a really good scrimmage. It doesn't mean that you say, okay, maybe we reevaluate. I think Fitz will still be the leader, but I think he can close that gap. You know, I look at it as like a boxing match. You know, Fitz came out and won the first four or five rounds. If Rosen can come out and, you know, he's won a round or two over the last week, if he can win the scrimmage, it's another round on the belt. And now, you know, you're getting closer to making it a decision. And that's what you want. You don't want to get knocked out in the early rounds. So, you know, Rosen, I think he needs a real nice scrimmage, you know, a nice preseason game or two. And you want to make it close at the end to get it to the judge's scorecard. So, and the judge, obviously, is Brian Flores. So I think that he can close the gap a little bit more. I think that, you know, if it's close, in my opinion, you go with Josh Rosen. So I think that should be his goal, to continue to make the coaching staff think that, hey, I'm improving, I'm continuing to grow, and I'm giving you reason to believe that you can give me the job week one.
And last big story from this week was the move at offensive line coach, fired Coach Flaherty. That was here about 5 months, I think it was 4 days into camp, and then brought in who I was actually with the Dolphins with, Cameron, the Guglielmo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we call him Googe. Yeah. So Googe is back there. You see any problem, any issue with the decision, bringing in Googe early and moving offensive line coaches this early in the camp?
I think it's twofold. One, I think it's a mistake. It's admitting a mistake, essentially. I think there's no way around it. I think, regardless of the timetable, regardless of if Pat Flaherty was Brian Flores' second or third or fourth choice because of the Super Bowl, ultimately, if you fire a coach 6 months after you hire him, you made a mistake. But on the other token, a lot of people wait too long to correct their mistakes. They say, you know, I'm going to live this through for 2 or 3 years and see how it works. You know, he went and admitted it from the jump. So I think you got to look at it those twofold things first. But second, I mean, the biggest thing for me, I think, is Michael Dieter and his development. I think he's probably the most important player on your offensive line this year. You know what Laremy Tunsil is. You have a couple veterans on that bunch who, you know, may not be part of your long-term solution. But Michael Dieter is a guy who you want to be a multi-year starter for you starting this year. So is he going to be developing better under Googe than he was under Pat Flaherty? And if he does, then I think it sort of salvages this move and turns it into a different direction. So we've seen Michael Dieter run a lot with the first team this week. You've seen him kind of show his potential. And when we see him in the preseason games, he looks like he's ready for the big time. And Googe can get more out of him, then I think we look at this move at the end of the year and say, hey, you know, that had a big reason why.
Cameron, to conclude things here, we appreciate your time. I want to bring you into one of the conversations we were having here on the show. When was the last time? Do you remember the last time you used a public payphone?
Ooh, a public payphone. Good Jesus. I don't know if I've ever used a public payphone.
Okay. Because Channing was saying that he misses using the public payphones because he can't find them anymore.
What about going into a gas station, Cameron, and asking the lady behind the desk, can you use their phone to make a phone call?
I might be telling my age here, but I don't think I've used a public payphone before. Any of those circumstances. I've seen them, obviously. And I've been around people who use, but I don't think I've ever used one.
There we go. I see. I'm
sheltered life,
but I'm more with Cameron. Like I've never even considered, unless it's some sort of crazy emergency, I've never considered going to a gas station asking to use their phone. Like that you just
right.
brought up something.
Usually, you find somebody with a cell phone, right?
Yes.
Like I guess in this day and age, you say, "Hey, can I use your cell phone?" I don't think I've ever used, like, I've used other people's, like, house landline, but not, like, a payphone.
See, I was hot when they took it from 25 to 35 cent a couple years back. That was the audacity of them.
Yeah, they got to rack their money up somehow, huh?
Goodness, I'm the only one putting money in there, that's why. They ain't made a dime in years.
Hey, Cameron, we appreciate your time as always. Great work covering the Dolphins for ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at Cameron Wolf, and look forward to seeing your thoughts based on tomorrow's scrimmage. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks, Gus.
All right, there he is. Cameron Wolf does a terrific job covering the team for ESPN. And, yeah, so he says that he's never used a payphone. I can't remember it. Now, like, I'll have to say that, like, I've used a public payphone before, but it's been a really, really long time. And I do not miss the payphone like you do. Yeah. And I have never, I can go on record saying I've never gone into a gas station and said, can I use your phone, like behind the counter there?
Like, excuse me, ma'am, you got a phone? Yes, sir. Can I use it real quick? Yes, sir. And they give it right to you. It's usually a portable phone, too. They hand it to you, walk around the gate.
So there's no wire attached to it?
No, bro, you can shop and talk on their phone as you shop.
Speaking of audacity, who does that?
Give them the phone back when you pay. Bro, it's a cheat code right now. I'm giving y'all cheat code.
Talk about squirreling.
You squirreling today. You running that fence.
Oh.